blood. You look to your buddies. You look to your friends.
There's only a couple guys in the whole world that make me love pro wrestling, and you're one of them.
You know all the bad shit you heard about us? It's all true. But another thing that's true is we love professional wrestling, and that's why we're here. I'm not sports entertainment anymore.
Talk to him, kid.
This is a new beginning, and it starts tonight.
A new day is dawning for DX.
You know who you're talking to.
Welcome to Xbox 12360, everyone. It's going to be a great episode. We're going to skip the news today because we have our guest in studio right now, and I just want to thank you so much, everybody. Okay, I'm just going to skip.
Given they know who
guys,
we are.
Yeah, you know, like this, we go through this whole dog and pony show. Okay, Jimbo, Denise, Bill Anstock, TK. But anyways, our guest this week, right off in the plane, airplane from LAX, the worst airport in the world, and give us his time today, Drew McIntyre. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Drew.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. Once I heard I had a podcast, I was excited. And when I heard it was you, I was even more excited. St. Petersburg misses you.
I miss St. Pete. I miss like all my friends there, you know.
That's just a great place.
I'm just so happy here, though. This is where I need to be.
You look happy. You look healthy.
Thanks. And so do you. You look amazing, Drew.
Oh, brother.
Even better than last time I saw you. But, no, seriously, thank you so much. I'm so grateful that, you know, I know you said that you were, you know, looking forward to coming and doing this, but man, I'd be honest with you, I wouldn't be too happy if I had to get off the airplane. I don't know where you came from. Did you come from Tampa?
Yeah, I came from Tampa.
Coast to coast, have to get right off the airplane and come to a podcast.
I'd be like, I'm weird, I guess. I don't know. I'm just like, if I'm talking about wrestling, then I'm happy. Like, I've got the opportunity to come, like, rap about wrestling with yourself. I tell the company all the time, just think of me like you're John Cena in NXT. If there's something going on and someone doesn't want to do it, I'm your guy. Nice. So I'm doing this, then I'm happy.
Well, that part, that's definitely an amazing quality to have when it comes to getting over with the company.
So, yeah. And it's not, like, something that's fake in any way.
No.
That's the thing. Like, I genuinely just enjoy this. And I think people have seen, especially the past few years and since I returned to NXT, like, what they see is what they get. I am just that obsessed with wrestling. I'm the biggest mark of all. Like, I just love this. Like, all of us, we took it this far. We did it as a job, and any opportunity to do it is a good time.
We were talking earlier, you know, because I wasn't familiar with who actually trained you. Like, and it wasn't because I didn't do research or anything. I just wasn't, I wasn't up on it because I couldn't figure out, because I knew you were from Scotland, and I was like, you probably didn't go to England to get trained.
Yeah, and I did. There was literally nothing when I started. The glory days of the world of sport had finished, and there was basically nothing going on in Scotland. There was two schools at the bottom of England, and I spent at least 5 years since I was 10 to try and find a school. I sent away, actually, for the Inside Secrets of Pro Wrestling by Dennis Brent and Percy Pringle
when
I was 10 years old, and it told me to keep kayfabe, so I kept those two books in a briefcase. Played along with my friends at school, like they were, you know, still like, not in on it or whatever, so I played along even though, because I was keeping kayfabe.
Yeah.
And eventually I found a school, and my mom was comfortable letting me travel the 12 hours down to the bottom of England to do it, and every opportunity, every Christmas money, every birthday money, I would spend it going to wrestling school, and eventually myself and a few friends started the Scottish wrestling scene, which today is probably the biggest wrestling scene in the world, which is pretty cool.
But so I'm pretty sure you would tell me earlier, 10 years old, right? You kind of started thinking you were going to pursue it.
Oh, yeah, I knew.
Me too.
Like, I was just like, I'm like, everyone's like, you know, that's that American thing. Like, no one from Scotland's ever just gone to America to WWE or whatever. And I was like, no, that's what I'm going to do. And I kept saying it and saying it and saying it, and eventually did it. And I tell everybody, no matter what your dream is, if you believe it enough, it's really as simple as just believing it.
For sure. And like, especially like when you're 10 years old and you get this in your head, you're going to do something and you focus on it, it's really hard to stop somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you have the tools. Like, I didn't even have the physical tools and I made it. You know, strictly on that focus and visualization.
It really is just in the head. Like, you got that passion. Like, you're one of the most passionate people when it comes to talking about wrestling. If you just believe it enough, you drive yourself enough, you just push, you can literally do it.
Everyone else will believe then.
Yeah, and that's it. Yeah. Like, you believe it, they believe it, and it works in every aspect of life, and especially in this business, and just find something you believe in, a promo in the ring, and you'll make them believe.
Hey, were you still in FCW when I met you?
I was still there.
Yeah, that's right. I wasn't quite sure if you were just coming in and out of there.
Oh, no, that's the first time we met. Yeah. So FCW, Wade Barrett and I were the tag team champions there for a while, and eventually got the chance to be FCW champion and feud with Sheamus a little bit. So those were
good times. I'm curious because, I mean, I know, like, what... Because I haven't been... I've actually, believe it or not, I've never been to the Performance Center.
Oh, really?
Even during WrestleMania weekend, I never went.
Your mind will melt.
I know, right? It's unbelievable. But, like, I have been... I have seen the NXT operation, how everything works, and talk to me about the difference between FCW and NXT now.
It's hard to verbalize.
Right?
You know, FCW was fantastic. I was actually there for the last 6 months of OVW. That's where I moved to initially when I just turned 22. And then to get to FCW, like when you move from Scotland to Louisville, Kentucky, it's like a bit of a culture shock. So when I went from Kentucky to Florida, it was going from black and white to color. I was, this is where I'm supposed to be. And you know, it was a great environment. I really learned like who I was, like Steve Kerr and Dr. Tom, Billy Kidman, Norman Smiley. And when it came to promos, Dusty Rhodes, you know, they really helped me hone who I was going to be. Like Steve saw that aggression, which I'm known for, in me, and you know, brought it out. And I really learned, but there wasn't really a... much of a line to the main roster, if you like, I guess, that's back then. So, like, I mean, you got brought up to SmackDown.
Sorry, Karen. How long were you there?
I was there for just over a year, I believe. Maybe close to a year and a half.
Actually, that's a pretty quick fast track to the main roster.
But, I mean, when I came to America, I landed in Louisville, and it just so happened the writers were there on my first week, and they needed a body in the ring. I didn't realize they came once every 6 months. And they just needed someone to work with somebody. I guess they liked what they saw. And I debuted on my fourth week in America as the fastest guy ever from developmental.
Yeah.
And they were telling me in the ring on SmackDown, work the hard cam, kid. And I was like, what the hell is a hard cam? I work all four sides, brother. I don't know what
a hard cam is. All four sides.
So, like, I guess Vince liked what he saw. And they kept me on the road. And I was learning for 6 months on the house shows, just trying to get me up to speed of, you know, the American style, the TV style. And then I went to FCW, came off of the road, and really, really learned and honed who I was going to be in FCW. But when I was coming up to the roster, they were telling me I was going to be a model character, the runway man. And I was 260. I leaned up to, like, about 225 at the time, was ready for this gimmick, had the meeting with Vince, asked me what I thought. I just told him, whatever it is, I'll do a good job. And eventually they just kept me as, you know, serious and something I'm more comfortable with. And, yeah, it was a relearning process, I guess. With the NXT now, like... It's unbelievable. It's like you go in there, you've got your character, you're on the TV show. It's such a cool place, cool buzz. The fans get to know you, and it's an exciting time when you debut on Raw or SmackDown. And you know, the comparison is just you can't compare. Like, if you went to that Performance Center, like, you would do the same thing I did. You would sit down, look around, and go, "Oh my God, this is unbelievable!" Like Hunter's the one that put it all together, and he's done a hell of a job.
And I just noticed that the atmosphere is so much different. Like, and just I don't know how to put them, not the morale, but maybe I guess the morale, okay, that's the right word to use, of the roster, NXT roster, just seems to be so much better.
Oh, yeah, and that's just, like, me coming back now. Like, when I left, it was still, I guess you consider it developmental.
Yeah.
It had the show, it was just a huge performance center, but, you know, I went away and the buzz started, it really caught on fire, and the level of talent was just unbelievable. When I came back, I recognized so many faces from my travels over the years, and just the buzz in the locker room, the way the shows are put together, you know, how much your opinion is valued, and it's a team effort now, and that's what it really feels like. It's just one big team effort, and I didn't want to be on Raw or SmackDown. You know, I've said that publicly before. I wanted to be part of NXT, and you know, the idea of Hunter bringing me into his baby and wanting me to be part of it was just a huge honor, because I wanted to be there, and I walked in and went, this is the place I was supposed to be.
It really doesn't have a developmental feel to it, Drew, to be honest with you, at all, man. It's a major brand.
And I don't look at it, like, nothing drives me more crazy. I said this when I came in initially, as the moving up thing. Like,
I gotcha.
Like, it's its own. Like, I understand it's not got the same size of stage at the moment, but that is not a developmental. That is not some fifth-rate thing. It is maybe the third brand, but it's one of the brands. And I guarantee in the next Superstar Shakeup, I said initially when the shakeup comes, I want there to be transfers between the three brands, because it really is that good, and you shouldn't be looking at it or putting it out there, you know, perception-wise, as this is third rate, because it's not. If everyone stops putting it out perception-wise as moving up or moving down or whatever, then it's going to be seen as top flight, which it should be, because it is so unbelievably good. And you can tell when you watch the show how good it is, and it gets me fired up talking about it. You can hear it in my voice. I won't swear because we're keeping it PG, but it annoys me.
The only thing we try to shy away from here is really the F-bombs. But, like, anyways, that's neither here nor there. You guys want to jump in at all?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to bogart the whole conversation.
It's good to catch up.
So you're talking about the amount of the brand that's happening being built in NXT. There's so much talent in the Performance Center. There's so much talent in NXT, especially these days. Just tons and tons of people. Do you think that there's ever going to be a point where NXT goes to more than an hour as a show?
Honestly, I think it's perfect right now. Like, the way it is, like, we're not all on every week's show. It's exciting when each person comes on. And, you know, I understand why in Raw and SmackDown it has to be that way. But I like what we've got going. That's what makes it cool. And we do have that incredible, like, talent roster. And there's just more guys come in all the time. And it's just, I'm excited to work with some of these guys, excited for the kind of television we're going to put together. And like I say, there's never felt more of a team than I do in NXT. And speaking of NXT, actually, since we're in town today, and this comes out this afternoon, this is not a week delay or anything. No. We've got a show in LA tonight. I don't know if there's tickets there, but you might want to check. And then we're off to Bakersfield tomorrow, then San Jose, then Sacramento. It's the final shows before the big show, the biggest show of the year, next Saturday, the 19th, on the network, $9.99. Takeover.
And you know, this run,
I
want to
get
right
that in before I forget.
This run is very similar to the first house show run I ever had at WWF. My first house show run, one of the dates was L.A., but actually Anaheim at the Pond. It was the very first event ever in the Pond. We opened it up. $105,000 house, and we were ecstatic.
Oh, yeah?
I remember Kurt Hennig going, is this your first $100,000 house, kid? You know, mind you, like, that's not even a big house anymore, really. The point I'm trying to make is all these shows are going to do better than the respective shows that I was on. They're going to draw more people, everything.
I can imagine the talent level you had back then, though.
Yes,
it was loaded, man,
top to bottom, and we weren't drawing. We weren't drawn, and you guys are, and it's great. So, but the thing, you know, you're talking about, like, the perception of the talent, you know, moving, making horizontal or lateral movements between the three brands, like in this shakeup. Like, man, and you don't have to, I'll spit it out. The pay structure in NXT kind of, if it was a little bit more similar to, you know, the main roster as far as house show pay and all that, I think it would do a lot to help.
And I can understand that. Like, the thing I have is just, you know, the talent, putting it out there is all about perception. I understand that, and you feel that, and you keep that to yourself. But it's the perception you put out there, because we have such a cool brand. And if you do anything to affect the name of it and affect the perception of it, why would you do that? Right. I want everyone to be pushing this as the brand it is, the top brand as far as I'm concerned, and it's all about perception. And you're going to have things that, you know, you personally feel, and you know, when I go there, I'm going to do this, I'm going to make this money, but right now I'm here, and I'm going to put out the best perception possible, and the best perception possible is I'm part of the coolest and best brand, and I won't make it look bad in any way. That's the problem I have.
Yeah.
Drew, after your first release from WWE, you reinvented yourself by going all over the world and wrestling all these different wrestlers of many different styles. What made you want to reinvent yourself, and how did that prepare you for your second run with the WWE?
Well, everything I learned, like I talked about FCW and, you know, getting the chance to be on the road and work with guys that aren't there anymore that have been around for a long time, and, you know, having mentors like Fit Finlay and William Regal, and just the unbelievable wealth of knowledge around me and the people I learned from, that prepared me for when I wasn't with WWE. Like, I had all the tools necessary that I was able to sit down and say, look, like, my wife was asking me, you know, you okay? This is, you know, your life's work and whatever. And I said, I think so. It's going to get pretty cool right now. I have a clear vision of what I want to do. I wanted to go back to Scotland to a company called ICW, Insane Championship Wrestling, put my mission statement out there. Let the world know, you know, that I'm coming, I've got a lot to offer, and, you know, the Scottish wrestling scene, the UK wrestling scene is about to reach a level it's never reached before. And I said some very bold things back then for the guy that was just in 3MB, and, you know, a lot of people paid attention. Mick Foley went on Austin's podcast, talked about it. A lot of people really, you know, put it over, but in the end, a lot of people were like, all right, you know, that was a good promo, but that's that 3MB guy. And thankfully, just through hard work and the talent level we have in the UK and all the places I was fortunate enough to work with, we really pulled together, and business grew to the point where the show in November there, when I returned, there was 1,500 people there. The show in November there had 8,000 people there at ICW, the biggest independent show of all time. And everyone just working together, just pulling the train, really has driven this industry to a new level in the independent scene, to the point where WWE want to work with them.
Yes.
These days, everyone's working together now for the betterment of this industry, and it's a really, really cool time. And these past 3 years, were just some of the best times of my entire career. It's one thing to be, you know, a cog or a successful cog in a huge machine, but to feel like you're really changing the business and giving to the business and driving it forward, that meant the world to me, and it's exactly where it needs to be right now. It's going to keep driving on without me. Now it's my time to come back and finish what I started in NXT.
And you know, in the UK scene, there's a distinctive UK flavor. Like, I mean, that makes it British wrestling,
yeah.
Or UK, however you want to put it. And like, I know it's the ICW, like, it's like the personalities, the characters.
Oh,
it's,
yeah, that's the cool
Scottish
thing. Yeah.
So UK. And it's great, man. Yeah, it's
the whole
really
of the UK.
Fun.
That's the cool thing about the UK is like there's so many guys, such talented wrestlers there, but also they've got the characters. I've found with the American scene, like Evolve in places that I've been able to represent. You know, it's very in-ring based and the top in-ring wrestlers on the planet, perhaps. And then when it came to the UK, we got great talent, but with these crazy characters as well. And, you know, to be like, going back there with these crazy characters, having fun, but also they're guys that I come up in the scene with like 15, 16 years ago. And just having that success with your buddies is the craziest feeling in the world.
Being able to share that with them, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sit back after a show and look at each other and start laughing. And go, we just drew the biggest independent show of all time. Remember that time in the first show when we had 20 people in the crowd?
It's an amazing feeling, man.
It's
like,
unbelievable. That's truly living the dream.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, speaking of all your buddies, you made your debut at Bola for PWG, and there's this great picture of you and all your UK guys hanging out behind the banner. How important was that to you to not only make it to PWG, and what was your experience like there?
That's the place. So when you, I guess, are accepted in PWG, you feel that you truly made it in the independent scene. And you know, to the ones who know, that's the mecca of independent wrestling. And I had the opportunity to be part of Bola. A lot of people had, you know, put a word in. You know, you need to give Drew an opportunity because guys from WWE past or my size are generally not given that opportunity in PWG, and I got that chance, and Roderick Strong actually is the one who said you should put him with Mike Bailey. I know he'll have a good match with him. Roddy's one of my favorite opponents in the world. And that night, you know, I was a little nervous, but I got in there with Bailey and we, you know, bust their ass. The crowd were just unreal. The atmosphere is unreal. And at the end of it, I got the, you know, please come back chant, and, you know, saw everybody's face afterwards and just had that feeling. And I was like, wow, I feel like I've really arrived in the independent scene. And, you know, for a guy that doesn't, you know, fit the stereotypical mold of the PWG wrestler, that felt, you know, pretty cool that I was able to do that there.
Did you know of Mike Bailey before you wrestled him there?
I was aware of him, but
had you seen him, or when you showed up and you're like,
I was
this
basically,
kid is the guy I'm wrestling?
Like, my schedule was traveling back and forth to the UK and America every 3 weeks for 3 years straight, basically. So I was on one of my many, many, many plane rides as the busiest wrestler in the world, Googling him like crazy, and I was like, wow, this guy's is pretty good. But after the match, I was like, this guy is unbelievable. Why is he not on television somewhere?
Yeah, you guys kicked the shit out of each other. I think we have clips of it going.
Yeah,
we did. But
He's great. Like in a safe way. Like, that's the way that I believe the business, you know, should be. And what draws the most money is, you know, looking like you're having a actual fight without walking away with any injuries.
Was there anyone on the indies that you didn't get to work when you came back that now you're back in NXT that you're like, man, I really wish I would have had a match with that guy before I came back?
Honestly, I think I pretty much got the chance to work with everyone. The big match everyone kept pushing for the first couple of years was Drew and AJ for a long time, but that's something that could conceivably happen now.
Yeah,
but that's basically the only one initially when he signed back. Everyone was like, oh, especially me. And again, right now, I am coming to Superstar Shakeups and when the three rosters are seen as the three rosters, that's something that it wouldn't conceivably happen. It's going to happen, like McIntyre versus AJ.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
How has the transition been for you? Because, you know, when you were in the indies, you were wrestling like 25-plus minutes a night, you know, going hard all the time. And now you're wrestling, you know, a different style where you don't get as much time to tell a story. How is that transition for you?
To be honest, I do, aside television, I do get that time, like on the NXT live shows that I just mentioned. We got one in LA tonight. we do get that opportunity. We're not told to hold back in any way. We've never been told to hold back in any way. And this WWE style thing, it's not really a WWE style. It's just doing something that makes sense. Like, that's one of the biggest things I took from here, was learning how to tell a story and do it in the right way, and also have a good match. You can do it all. You can tick all the boxes if you just learn how to do it. And that's the biggest thing I took back to the UK scene, and trying to show guys, you know, how to do it and help, you know, bring them up. So I'm a little bit off track here.
You're like, reel me back in.
I know, so I will go off on random subjects. What was the original question? I was about to just start going off on a big plane.
Like changing your style from TV wrestling.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. I was about to just go off in a big talk about the UK scene. I was like, wait, that wasn't even the question in the first place. I love
do you feel like you changed your style?
But no, that's the thing. It's about, you know, telling a story out there is the biggest thing of all. And like even like the television matches, you can have, if you get 6 minutes, you're going to make the most of that 6 minutes. It doesn't mean cram 6,000 moves in the 6 minutes. You're going to pick the moments to get your face time, to get your story over. It's a short story, but chances are the story's about one particular person. And when the other person knows their role, you work together, and that's what it's all about. And once you learn the key to ticking all the boxes and getting both guys over, getting the story over, and having the good match, even if it's a short match, that's when you really start thriving. And the biggest thing of all that I've finally done over the past few years, I relax these days.
Yeah.
When you relax, you actually enjoy yourself. The fans enjoy themselves more, and you remember everything. My first few years are just a blur because I was so tense the whole bloody time.
Yeah, and it's really hard to keep yourself in the moment, too, man, when you're like that.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Just, yeah, like, what's next? What's next?
Well, speaking of the UK, I know you have your match against Bobby Roode at TakeOver for the NXT title. Maybe when you win that title, will you plan on being the first guy to win the NXT title and the UK championship together? You want to go face Pete Dunne?
Absolutely. Why on earth wouldn't I?
Have you ever worked with Pete Dunne?
I've never actually worked with Pete Dunne one-on-one. We had a tag match during the Download Festival. With NXT, we got to interact a little bit. But yeah, I would love to work him. He's a hell of a talent. Just a testament to the level of the UK wrestlers. I keep talking about the UK scene.
That's great, man.
It's unbelievable. When I left, we were all basically teaching each other and trying to figure it out. We were building a scene when I moved to America.
Yes.
I was 6 years of building a scene, and I went away. And while I was away, those guys kept going and kept growing the scene. And when I came back and I saw the level of guys, and I saw people like Pete Dunne, I was like, wow, we're a lot more advanced than we used to be. So
yeah,
if I get that opportunity, that'd be unreal. But yeah, next Saturday, the TakeOver, like you say, I don't know if we're going to get there eventually, but this is the match that, you know, everything, like 17 years of wrestling, the past few years, just everything I've done has been building to this match. And I'm trying not to, you know, think about it too much because I've got these four shows to focus on first, but I guarantee everybody it's going to be a spectacle. Like anyone's ever watched any of my matches and enjoyed them, the Bailey one, Mike Bailey one, or whatever we're talked about already, this is going to be a match that tops all of them. I'm going to bring out things you've never seen me do before.
Nice, man. And it's going to be in quite possibly the nicest arena in the world. Have you ever been to the Barclays?
Oh, I have.
That's amazing, right? Do you know they have grass on the roof?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's a yard up there. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. But I mean, it's going to be a sold out Barclays Center, and the place is going to be electric. And that's the best feel. That's the best drug in the world, man.
Yeah, in the world. I can't even imagine. Like, I got the chance to do a match in Chicago.
Yeah.
With NXT for the TV prior to TakeOver. I've never done a TakeOver. I've only been back 4 months. This is my first TakeOver, and it's for the title against Roode. Mm-hmm. You know, in the main event, and you know, it's something that a lot of people might. It'll be like, oh my God, the pressure. But I'm just beyond excited for this opportunity. And the way I see it is just everything's been leading to this moment.
Sure,
and my story, my ups, my downs, my everything has just led to this match. And I guarantee everyone will be talking about it after.
Was somebody going to say something?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that makes your matches like so unique and so enthralling when you're watching them is that you're able to adapt to different wrestler styles. Was that difficult for you to, you know, be able to, you know, like adapt to each and every one of them?
No, I enjoy it. Like, if everyone was the same, it'd be so bloody boring. But, you know, I love when someone's a different style, different sizes, different styles. Like, I probably work better with the smaller flyers.
I was wondering that.
But I also, like, enjoy the heavyweights, like, slugging it out with each other. But, yeah, I just love when, like, especially in WWE now, NXT, there's just a smorgasbord of different shapes and sizes. It's not all the jack models or whatever. And, you know, it's cool to get that and different styles and different characters. It's just very different now. And I've been around long enough with WWE to watch it evolve into the way it is now. People can relate more to these different characters rather than everybody being exactly the same.
And we were talking, since you brought that up, we were talking earlier about, you know, like maybe some guys telling you, hey, you're a big guy, maybe you should work stronger, or, you know, not sell this or that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were talking about Scott Hall
and
how and his philosophy, and like, you know, he's always sold for everyone so he could work with everyone. He had, and it just opened up the, you know, the possibilities of so many different people you can work with and draw money with. Like,
absolutely.
If they can't get you in trouble, you can't make any money with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. and I 100% agree with that. And what we were talking about there, it was, you know, Shawn Michaels had mentioned that,
yeah,
that to me. When people would tell me, you know, work like a bigger guy, I was like, well, work like a bigger guy
in the right
times, but also I'm going to have the good match and I want to be able to work with everybody. And, you know, we can cover all the boxes that we talked about earlier, just doing it the right way. There's nothing more boring than a big plodding guy unless you're legitimately 7'4" or something.
Right? And Shawn hit you with the Scott Hallism, right? Maybe you need to get a bigger TV.
Yeah, in real life, yeah. People are always saying to me, man, you're a lot bigger in real life. And I'm like 6'5", 260 right, legit, like 6'7", my boots on. And my reply all the time is this guy, oh, yeah, maybe you should get bigger TV.
Oh, yeah, that was the standard reply every time.
To me now, it's like the same. As soon as someone says it, it's automatic. It just comes out your mouth without thinking. Yeah. How's the weather up there, cold?
Well, speaking of Scott, you did mention that this time around in NXT, like, he's one of your mentors or coaches. What's that experience been like?
Sean. I've started something I've not spoken about publicly yet, but, you know, Shawn Michaels teaches pro wrestling at the Performance Center, and when I come in, the contract I have, I don't, you know, technically have to be there. I've been fortunate, you know, with the deal I have. But then when you've got that opportunity, you're in that position, then it's up to you, you know, whether you want to sit in your arse, mm-hmm, or you have an opportunity to go and work with the best in-ring wrestler of all time. And I ask, hey, can I go to work with Shawn Michaels at the PC? And I've been there for maybe the past, you know, 6-7 weeks. And just being in there, there's a few of us, a select few that have been wrestling a long time. It is literally like studying for your PhD in wrestling, wow, like the way, you know, he does it. I won't give too much away because the first rule about Sean's class is don't talk about Sean's class. So I'm just gonna
it's like fight
hey man, that's like that's like learning the ways of the Force with Yoda.
Exactly, that's exactly what it's like. It really feels that way. Like it's surreal. Like he said it as well at first. You know, we had a conversation after the first class, and you know, he appreciates that I drove there, or whatever. But in the end, I would drive across the country to work with Shawn Michaels and whatever. And he said, you know, eventually it won't be like that anymore. I'll just be a regular old Sean, but it never becomes like that for any of us. The guys in there are guys that have done it for a long time, you know, love this business and should be in that class working with him, and it never gets old. Whenever you have a question or any of us have a question, we just ask Shawn Michaels, the best of all time.
Yeah, right?
That's simple. It's pretty crazy.
That's crazy. Like, I wasn't aware that actually that he had that kind of that advanced secret, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah. He's talked about it himself, but it's not talked about too much. So
I was just surprised he actually, like, they actually talked him into selling his place in Texas and moving to Orlando.
Yeah, as soon as I heard, like, he was there, that was the first thing I was thinking, how am I going to weasel my way into this thing? And then,
hey, can you say who else goes to the secret class?
I don't know if I can.
All right, but,
so, but I remember that first rule and second rule.
Well, being such a lifelong fan since you were like 10, working with Shawn Michaels and having him as a mentor now, would you say that's your biggest, like, mark out moment you've had in your career? Or?
Oh, I've had tons. So I can't even put into words or remember half the times that I've reacted. Like, I am that big a fan. Like, Brett was, like, my favorite wrestler when I was younger. And I had the opportunity to become, like, close with him. And when I was Intercontinental Champion, we traveled a tour of Germany together. So we were sitting in the bar and whatever. And I've got, like, a picture that I love, like, with me with the IC title with Brett. And, you know, the things that I've spoke about and learned from him. And now I'm working with, like, Sean, like, two of, like, my favorite ever and the best, like, ever. It's just, you know, that's pretty surreal. And just shows in Scotland, like, in front of sold-out crowds. And the opportunity to do promos in front of my family. Like, my mom's no longer with us, but I got the chance to do promos in front of, like, my family. And Arn Anderson told me one time, just say whatever you want. There's one particular one. I got the spotlight put on my mom and dad, and I told everybody to be real quiet and put their hands together slowly for the night. The lights were just right. The music was just right. My mom and dad came together and created me, and I got everyone to applaud for the night. My dad did it. It made me a sold-out building in Scotland.
That's great.
Later on, she's like, oh, you. And I was like, you'll be telling your girls that at the cards night. And it's memories like that. And I was just no longer with us. And money can't buy memories like that. And,
man,
you know, things like that. Those are the kind of things that, you know, like, not necessarily mark out, but, like, lifetime memories that you never forget and this business provides.
Yeah, and the memories, that being the parent.
Yeah,
as a parent,
as annoyed as you act, like, secretly, like, oh, I know it's going away when Drew did this, and then every other parent's like, oh, well, that's pretty crazy. Not you, Jimmy down at the fast food joint.
Is what my son did for me in front of, like, thousands of people. And tell me what your son does for you.
So, yeah, it's pretty surreal. But that's the thing. Like, it's a sacrifice. Like, I did have to move away. Like, you know, I've been gone 10 years. I didn't get to see my friends and family, and that was the hardest thing of all. But being able to, you know, have memories like that, you know, and follow my dream and all I ever wanted to do. That's, you know, pretty cool, a pretty cool life.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about, like, before you left to WWE, you know, the whole 3MB experience. How do you look at that?
Fun.
Yeah.
I'm friends with, and yeah, we're getting paid to be silly on TV. Like, everyone was like, I know, I appreciate everybody out there that, you know, kind of fought for me. Like, Drew should be doing something serious, and, you know, he's a big guy and he can wrestle and whatever. And I appreciate all that. But the reality is, you know, I wasn't doing anything for a little while at that point. Like, Vince had an idea. I was injured at the beginning of it, which meant I really couldn't do anything. And it kept us on TV, and it meant I got to have a laugh with a couple of my buddies. And I look at it as a fun time. You know, did I have bigger aspirations? Yeah, and I'm still young enough. I just turned 32 last month, and, you know, I did all the things that I've done so far. Yeah. But I look back at that like, man, that was some fun times. And now I'm doing what I planned to do all along, but that was fun.
Yeah. And I never saw, like, every time I saw you during that period, you always maintained a fantastic attitude. You never boo-boo fit. You never had that, you know, lip bottom lip sticking out.
That's walking the worst around. Thing. That's a kiss of death once you get that. Yeah.
You know.
In the end, like, you got to take a step outside, or if you have to, look back what your friends are doing back home in the real world, and then just realize that no matter what you're doing, you're doing what you always wanted to. You're living the dream, and maybe not necessarily what you had envisioned, but when it's something like the 3MB, that was just fun. And, you know, since then, we've all done what we've done. Like, buddy Heath's had his kids gimmick with Rhino and having a great time. And Jinder's went on to be the body guy and world champion. And achieved the things I've achieved the past few years, a main event and takeover with Bobby Roode. So in the end, you know, we had all those fun times, and now we're doing what we're doing now. And it may be one day, once we're, you know, not still young, that we can reform the group when we don't have to take bumps anymore.
I think it would get over huge.
And it's a thing, nostalgia. People remember things differently than they actually happened.
Well, yeah, I hope you know that 3MB, especially like among the circles that I'm in, 3MB is huge. Like, people, like, everyone I know, 3MB is like one of their favorite things that's happened over the last summer year.
That was cool talking with the fans. Like, when you heard people talk about it, I was like, man, that's pretty cool. Yeah. Like, they're having fun with us, because you could see, like you're saying, no boo boo faces. We're out there and just had a laugh. We had fun, and people were in on the fun with us. Like, they do. Like, it's all, like, you know, a good time and whatever. Yeah. And they were having a good time with us, and we were legitimately going out and hanging out during that period. Like, so we were just like living the gimmick with them.
Was there ever a point in time where you got frustrated with that and with your position?
Not in 3MB, maybe when I was younger, when I wasn't, I was the tag team champion, Intercontinental champion, had done the Chosen One stuff, and then I wasn't doing anything. I certainly got frustrated during that period, and possibly, definitely, you know, acted out a little bit. And
was it like a creative satisfaction, frustration, or a money thing, or what?
No, it was never a money thing. I don't think, maybe I should have more money conversations in my career, but basically, the older I get, the more I think that way, have a mortgage and stuff now. But it's always been about creative satisfaction for me. You know, this is, if I don't feel creatively fulfilled, I can be a bit of a botheration. When I was younger as well, like, I was a bit of a, you know, a hothead, and I had a lot of, you know, personal stuff going on. Like, my mom, got sick while I was, you know, just after that Chosen One stuff, and I was really going through a tough time, and I was really acting out during that period. So, in the end, I moved to America when I was 21, 22, and I was inside this bubble growing up in it, and I really didn't have a perspective of the real world. I had to step away. Like, being away was the best thing that could ever happen to me. I stepped away. I became a man.
Yeah.
I really learned, you know, how to build my business and build other businesses, and got myself where I needed to be in the business, where I needed to be for me to come back. And it was the right time for both of us, and it worked for both of us.
For sure, man. Like, I look at your departure and then showing up in ICW over in England.
Yeah, Scotland.
Scotland. And then, like, what culture, pro wrestling, all that stuff, Australia. It was
Evolve everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was literally everywhere. Yeah, like, what culture as well. Like, I had a great title run there, and really, really good times. But yeah, I think at one point I was the Australian champion, the Denmark champion, the Germany champion, the ICW champion, the Evolve and Dragon Gate double champion. And I can't even remember. I kept saying Ultimo Dragon, I'm coming for it.
Yeah, but like, I mean, you took the things that you learned in WWE, and
yeah, that's the thing.
And then you were able to cultivate your own image, your own persona, not the companies. And it seems like you carried that back in with you, right?
Absolutely. And yeah. that's the thing, you know, took all the lessons I learned, but also, you know, watching people like the Matt Hardys and the likes, the social media
yeah.
people, I had always had a clear vision in my head. Through social media, I can take everyone in this journey with me. We can grow together.
Yep.
And that's, you know, exactly what I did. But yeah, it was such a crazy ride, but I really found myself as a performer and as a man and really grew up a lot. And, you know, just where I need to be. Like, I look back and I'm like, man, like, I wouldn't have made myself champion back then. Yeah. I wasn't ready. But now, like, I'm ready for everything. There's nothing that can be thrown at me that I've not seen, nice. Done, and I'm ready for, and still young enough to be able to do it all.
Now, when you departed WWE, was there any kind of, like, fear of going back out into the, you know, I mean, because, you know, once you're there for a while, I mean, you get caught up in the fam, like part of the family, and like,
oh yeah,
it's like easy to think there's nothing else besides WWE.
Yeah, and that's kind of like how I felt when I was there. Like when it came to like the idea of not being there, I was like, man, this is what I'm used to. This is where yes. I grew up. I grew up in WWE. And
yeah,
I became an adult in WWE. So yeah, initially there was, you know, I got the call and I sat down. I was by myself. Like I said, the wife was at work, and I just thought it through, and I went, all right, this is my chance. This is, you know, put up or shut up. I spoke to a couple of guys that had been in a similar position, and they told me, well, here's how it goes. You go out there, you make, you know, what you make from TV, you play the character you were in WWE, and then the money eventually goes down, and you find money you stay at. And I heard that, and I went, that's not me. I'm not going to be that guy that just goes down. I'm going to make something different. I'm going to be me, and I'm going to grow, and I'm going to be worth more, and I'm going to come one of the top wrestlers in the world.
Yeah.
I got that clear vision in my head and just pushed myself, and I don't know how my wife put up with it, because I was never home. And was literally the busiest wrestler in the world, and I went from, I know like PWI is not the be-all and end-all these days, but it meant a lot to me as a kid to watch myself go from the high 300s and when uh-huh. I left to joint 10 last year with Cena, and is, you know, that's pretty cool and like a testament
it
to
is cool.
busting your arse for a few years, and you can really make things happen if you just push and push and have a very, very understanding wife.
It is cool. It is cool, and it's good to be proud of shit like that. Like when people go, oh, you're such a mark for... You know, F you. Like, I mean, work your ass off, and like your, you know, entire life for this. It's okay to be proud of number 10 and top, you know, PWI or Wrestler of the Year and this, or Wrestling Observer Best, you know, like comeback, whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, and
are these the same people that think the belt's not real or whatever?
Sure.
Like, you're rewarded for your hard work in somewhere, yeah. given compliments for your hard work. That's, you know, you take that and go, thank you, I appreciate
and
that.
And I understand why some people have had that mentality, but like, I want to enjoy, like, I'm still a fan, even though I'm in wrestling. And so, like, it's not just all about the money, you know?
Absolutely. And that, like, hopefully never stop becoming fans, because the second you get comfortable is, like, this is, you know, a big thing I've learned, especially recently, but it's something I did naturally without being pointed out. The second you become comfortable is yeah. the second you're screwed. You'll never reach that top level, top level. You never stay at that top level if you become comfortable.
Hey, do you watch any wrestling other than like what you're doing these days?
I try time? To, but yeah, it's like non-stop
no,
at the moment.
No.
But I try to, like, on my phone, I watch, you know, what's going on.
Who are you a fan of?
God, this is the time.
Sorry.
Where
I don't want to do what's your favorite color question, because I don't want those, but I'm just curious, like,
yeah,
you know.
I know, like, I can, maybe guys I like wrestling, or you have matches with, might be better. Like, you know, like most people are going to say, like, the Kenny Omegas and stuff, because
sure.
I would say that as well, because I really enjoy watching him wrestle, because he's really good.
Yeah.
Somebody I'd love to wrestle.
Did you not ever
no,
get to get in the ring with him at CW?
No, never. He wasn't there. The big thing when I left initially, everybody was pushing, like, Drew in New Japan. And,
yeah.
It just never materialized. Like, the way my career went, we were never able to make that happen. So him and I never got the chance to actually wrestle, but I got the chance to wrestle most of the guys that kind of had the buzz that are, you know, real good, like the Ospreys and Ricochets and
sure.
the likes. And, you know, I had a couple of my favorite matches with those guys. Like an Osprey, you know, somebody I hear everybody talking about, you know, doesn't know what he's doing, whatever. That's just not true
That's
at all.
That's not true,
like,
at all, yeah.
No, we had the match and we told the story that needed to be told. And I was the good guy. He was taking heat on me and the crowd believed 100%. I watch it back now and I put it up there with any match, one of my favorites. And what he can do in the ring is just unbelievable. But he knows exactly what he's doing. And anyone that says that is just watching the highlights of the matches, or if they're specifically
we're
just
watching
doing that
something
match
out of
for,
context.
Yeah, like that's
yeah.
exactly
a highlight reel of him and Ricochet. And
hopefully they know exactly what they're doing. There's a couple of my favorite opponents. So when it comes to the flying guys who can do things that human beings should not be able to do.
Osprey's kind of a natural heel, huh?
Sorry. Oh, yeah. And, like, yeah, he's in real life, he's just the nicest guy. But
yeah, but he comes
Yeah. And it's crazy. Like you say, like he got the heat on me in that match. Right. I'm three times the size of him, but the crowd believed it and they got into it.
Going back to the Scott Hall philosophy of being able to work with anybody, so exactly. Yourself or anyone could get you in trouble.
100%. And because of that, and getting the people to believe, we had one of my favorite matches and feel creatively fulfilled and really came back feeling like, man, we really did something there instead of me just plodding around beating on you.
You're a giant among British wrestlers or UK wrestlers. Like, I mean, you're kind of you're still a big wrestler, you know, here in the States or WWE, but like kind of a mid to upper, you know.
So, yeah, like these days maybe like bigger than it was before. I've watched like kind of the shapes and sizes have changed. Like there's the guys who are big are generally really big, like the Strowmans and big shows now. Like when my boots are on, like 6'7", 260, like these days that's, you know, a pretty big guy.
Yeah.
But there's not too many of us, but it's cool that there are so many different shapes and sizes.
In the UK, there's not a lot of big guys.
No, I'm like Lesnar or whatever in the UK. I see challenges. I still use the overhead suplex. I run the guy to the corner and I throw them, and they always land flat, but I used to see how far we could get some guys. And I'd tell them. So we're doing people tossing today.
while we're talking about your favorite guys of the indies, why don't you tell us, like, what are a few guys that maybe we haven't seen yet in the PC or in NXT that you think have the potential to just be enormous? Or who should we keep our eye on?
I can't keep putting me on the spot. Yeah. I forget, and then I leave, and then I go, why didn't I see this dude? There is so many. I was in the gym the other day. They have like performance shows, like in-house shows for people to practice, and I was working out in the gym and I could see it, and there's a lot of people doing well. I just don't want to single them out because then they'll get a big head. I want them to keep pushing.
So do they bring in the audience to watch those shows, or just like the people that
the
are
roster
already
members
around?
Yeah, like people that are in the PC. There's a lot. That's a big difference between FCW and NXT. Like we had about 40 people or something. It seems there's about 4,000 people there. So they've got plenty of bodies. There's so many, you know, different people in different styles. Yeah. But yeah, you really can't single people out. There's just so many different people, but so many good people. And the cool thing is, they are working on those different styles and whatever. And Sarah's just done an insane job with the girls as well.
Like the Sarah Del Rey.
Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
Like the level of like women's wrestling, like they're like on our shows as well, and NXT as well as the Raw and SmackDown. They're stealing the show.
I was so hoping that we would get to see Sarah in a WWE ring, but I think there's some some injuries or something.
Yeah,
it's so hard to pass that physical to work full time in WWE.
It's like, oh yeah, they check everything head to toe.
True. Half the guys that I worked with in the Attitude Era in the 90s and all that would never have been able to work full time in WWE.
Yeah.
Never been able to pass that physical.
Oh, yeah,
you know, torn tendon here, torn this, torn bicep. You know, I mean, they don't mess around anymore.
No,
man.
What's the physical
literally head to toe. Everything. Like your heart, lungs,
stress test and all that?
Yeah, like knees, shoulders. You'll do your impact test, which is your, you know, concussion related. If you ever get hurt again, you'll have to do that again. But they literally check for everything. Like, and it's saving like lives and making people aware that if they've got heart conditions, happened a couple of times, that you know that you're ready to go. Or if you got something wrong, they're able to tell you, so you're able to, you know, make sure you're around for your kids in the future.
So one of your good friends, he was a groomsman in your wedding. He is now a champion, so Jinder Mahal. What was your conversation like when, you know, he kind of changed his life to what he is right now?
I'm so proud of everything he's done with himself. We were literally like in a bar in Tampa, McDinton's.
McDinton's, wow.
No, Seamus still goes there to this day. 10 years. It's where I met my wife as well. Oh, she'd be horrified I said that.
People always want to fight McDonald's.
Don't tell me about it. But I met him there one time. I wish I could pinpoint it. A couple of years ago, and you know, he was telling me he's not wrestling so much. He'd went to 260, but not a good 260. And he was kind of not motivated at the time, and he wasn't really following the path I was following, like sticking at the wrestling. And it seemed like, you know, he's a smart guy. He had his business things going on. He was talking about a franchise, perhaps with Subway or whatever, and had his real estate going on. and it seemed like he was going to slow down on the wrestling, and then he started, you know, getting himself back in shape, just kind of giving himself a kick in the arse. WWE had called to bring him back, really started following that track, and was just so driven, and then stopped drinking, and I was watching him as he was doing it, and listening to him as he was doing it. He just kept pushing and pushing, and, you know, it really motivated me and excited me to see him so motivated again, see my friend doing so good, and then he got himself into the most ridiculous condition I've ever seen, just from busting his ass.
It's people can, like, roll their eyes or, like, say whatever they want, but, man, that is an incredible amount of hard work. The training sessions
I train with him as well sometimes, and he trains like an absolute animal. Like, him, myself, Seamus, like, we bust their ass, but when it comes to diet, nobody touches him on the diet, and he's worked his butt off. They're drug test regular in the company.
That's
people can say whatever they want to say, but he has worked his ass off. And I was there the night in Chicago. Like I say, I did the pre-show for the TV for NXT the night before. We stayed for the pay-per-view the next day with him and Randy. I didn't want to know the result. I told both of them, don't tell me. I watched it from the crowd. And when he won, most of the NXT roster were going to the bus. I sprinted off like the bloody Ultimate Warrior straight to Gorilla. And then I was right waiting there when he got back. I was so over the moon for him. I'd have bust out a big 3MB guitar thing when he got the three count as well.
That's hard work, man. That's what that'll do, man. So hard work, a good attitude.
Yeah, you bust your ass, you keep the head up. And like he'll say himself, you know, he got a bit down for a bit. And he was just like, what am I doing? Both of us, we look back and we didn't give it everything we could during that first run. That we could have been not going out so many nights out. We could have been busting our ass a little more, or just certain areas we could have tried harder at. And both of us have the same mentality of, you know, we've learned from our mistakes. We're grown-ass men now, and we're going to give it everything we've got. And when you give it everything you've got, then that's when you reap the rewards.
Go ahead.
Sorry. You were talking about your motivation to come back and be a top guy. And you're talking about how you're excited to be one of the faces of NXT or the face of NXT. Are you able to tell us at all about what the conversation was like as far as expectations when you got that call that they wanted to bring you back?
The call was basically, we feel like it's the right time. And it was the right time, and was going to give you, you know, an opportunity to be you. And that's all what it really came down to, and all I've ever wanted was just that opportunity and that belief. And they watch everything that's going on. They're not blind to what's going on. And, you know, that when it comes to NXT, that's Hunter's baby. He's not just bringing people in for a laugh. You know, that really meant a lot to me that, you know, he personally spoke to me and we had a good conversation for about 30 minutes. And after that phone call, like, no matter what I was thinking prior or where I was thinking about going prior or what my plan might have been, that my mind was made up when I spoke to him. And I felt like, you know, all that hard work just felt worth it after that phone call, and to get the opportunity and the platform that he's provided me, it's really, you know, it's cool. Like the same thing with Jinder busting his ass and getting that title, just getting this opportunity, you know, from Hunter for something that means so much to him really, really means the world. And, you know, I'm not going to let him, my fans, my family, or myself down.
You know, like when you, I just might be kind of going backwards or whatever, but like I was just thinking about like the confidence level must be through the roof right now for you, huh?
Just always the same.
Really? I mean, by that is, like, when you leave WWE and you thrive the way you have, and then you're able to come back the way you have, man, come on. You got to be like, I can do anything.
No, certainly not anything. I never
come
changed.
Come on, dude.
Like, I found that the way that, you know, you achieve, like, success and do well is just being a good guy. Like, it seems like it's hard work to be a bad guy and be a cocky guy. It seems like a lot of work. Like, I just tend to just be, you know, be yourself, bust your ass. I mean, you get the opportunity when you know your match, you know your segment, just kill it every time and be nice to everybody. And, like, I guess the upside for me is things like this. I genuinely enjoy doing stuff like this and doing every interview and stuff. So you work your bollocks off and then you'll get there, and just don't be cocky about it. I've done it, like I say, for 17 years since I was 15, never had a real job, and just this is fun for me and I get paid for it, and thankfully paid very well for it.
Never had a real job, never bounced? Never bounced in the club?
Nothing. So I was just 15, I was at high school when I started on the weekends. At university, I missed half my classes because I was gone all the time. I remember, like, I would always try and ease people into being a wrestler. My first day at uni, some of the girls were looking through the register, typing people's names into Google, and they were bringing up silly images like, oh, such and such, you've got a gravestone in Kentucky. Oh, such and such, you run a business in this place. Andrew Galloway, you're a professional wrestler, and it's actually you in your underpants. Everybody come around the screen. So, like, I like to ease people into it usually. But that's all I've ever done. Then I worked full-time for, like, Brian Dixon during my summer holiday. holidays and my Easter holidays was always bent wrestling. And then I got signed when I was 21 and straight to America. My last year at uni, finished uni straight to America. And Brian, haven't stopped since.
Brian Dixon was All-Star.
Yes, All-Star. Promotions. The only other full-time place.
That's right.
Aside WWE and, I guess, Japan.
He recently, like, he still has some towns, but I heard, like, some of the towns aren't
I think maybe Alex Shane does the camps now. But he still runs towns. Like, he never stops. He wouldn't be able to stop. He'd go insane if he stopped. Like, a man is just driven, and one of the most successful British promoters of all time.
You can
say whatever you want about them, and people do, but
successful. But I've always heard, above and beyond, like, the things that everyone will say.
Oh, yeah, and he gave me an opportunity to learn. Like, there was nowhere to go full-time, and where I was learning, like, myself and Sheamus and Wade Barrett, we would go there. Like, that was our idea in our head. We were going to go there. That's the next step before WWE, and it was, because we worked full-time. We got matches with guys that are more experienced. I got to be around Robbie Brookside. And
when
that
you
beat
say
America,
full-time, Drew, you mean every stinking day.
Oh, yeah. Like, my summer holidays were 4 months straight, six days a week, with Tyson Kidd, who was there as well. We'd spend time together. He helped me a lot as well, TJ. So we literally would spend 6 days a week, six-hour drives to these small Butlins camps.
Yeah.
Every single day we'd set up the ring, we'd do our singles match, which was usually the first match, maybe 20 minutes. Then we'd do our rumble at the end or a tag match, whatever. We'd take down the ring, we'd drive to the next town, just every single day.
The camps, you called them what?
Butlins camps. Holiday camps.
And I know what they are. Can you explain that real quick?
Basically, like in the UK, like, you know, families that don't necessarily have so much money or whatever go to these Butlins camps where they have like little chalets.
They're like resorts, right?
Yeah, like a resort. That's a good way to describe it. Where they have like their entertainment for the evening in like a big circus tent gimmick. So the entertainment for the evening would be wrestling.
Or tribute show.
They would have
like
a singer from the past of the 80s or 90s or whatever there, and a comedian, whatever. And then wrestling would be there like twice a week in the same Butlins. And we would kind of do the loop. We'd do one place one day, the next day, next day, next day, come back again, so wrestling's on this night, and we get like 2,000 people there or something. All the people on holiday would come in, and back then, like, a good show when I was in the UK scene before I came to America was like 50-100 people. So to see 2,000 people, we got the chance to learn how to work in front of a, you know, big crowd, and that's where we really learned to get comfortable in front of a crowd and how to kind of play with their emotions, which is one of the coolest things we do in this job, is getting people, you know, up, getting them down, getting them angry, getting them sad. And, you know, that's a really good place. And Daniel Bryan's talked about it all the time, that you really learn to work a crowd doing those Butlins holiday camps.
Nice. What kind of character, were you always Drew Galloway when you were doing those camps, or did you have to be like a tribute character at times?
I was Drew Galloway with the kilt, Scottish guy. Yeah, Bryan looked after me. He always liked me. I was his big baby face, I guess, with the kilt on that I'd whip off like a stripper when I got to the ring.
You mentioned the kilt. It makes me think of your new music. How are you liking your new music compared to your old music?
The 3MB one? Or?
No, I mean the original Drew Gallo, the Drew McIntyre.
I mean, you can't really compare them. The one now suits me more. Just my demeanor and everything, it just suits me to a T. The old one I loved, and you know, everyone loves, and you know, again, nostalgia. Everybody's like begging for it right now, which is cool. When I say, I love the song, but the reality is the way I used to come out and the cadence and steps and faces and everything I used to do just wouldn't really match that song. But I love that song. But the current one is, perfect for me right now. Maybe eventually we'll add some words, but I don't know. I really like this new one.
There are a lot of younger guys in NXT. You know, working with them, what kind of relationship do you guys have, you know, asking you questions about, since you've already been around it, you know, once over here in the company?
Just anybody that wants to get some advice, I'm always happy to answer. I think people are sometimes intimidated or not sure what to do. Like the younger ones, it's generally the ones that have been doing it for a while that ask, like, and I do the same. Like, people like myself and Roderick Strong will ask each other to watch each other's matches, and that's usually what you do with your friends when you want to get better. I think the younger ones are kind of intimidated, and they do ask, and some of them will ask me to watch their matches and whatever, but I'm always there for advice. But anybody needs it, like anywhere outside of wrestling or whatever, tweet me. You know, I'm always there. I've been around the block a few times, and I'll be going around the block a bunch more times before I'm done.
Have you had any matches with Chris Hero?
I have. I actually, my first indie match back, I went to ICW, did my return promo. My first match was with Evolve against Hero, who was the champion at the time, Cassius Ohno. And I beat him, and that was my first match. I won the title off him and kickstarted my year-long run with Evolve as their champion. But yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, it's, I'm
last
so
year,
happy.
He was just killing it. Every show I was on, like, if he had a match on it, I don't care if I was on after him or before him, I was watching his bloody match.
Sure, and you were in FCW with him at the same time, correct?
I wasn't. I was already on SmackDown at the time, I think. I was watching what was going on, but I did a couple of NXT shows when he was there.
Good to see him back.
He's, again, a guy who's worked his ass off his whole life, and is so bloody talented.
You work with Matt Riddle?
Oh, yeah. Riddle was my last Evolve match, actually. So I beat Hero in the first title, first match, won the title. My last match, I quit match with Matt Riddle. Uh-huh. We had a bit of a feud going on for the last few months I was there.
And how'd you guys match?
Great. He's a former UFC fighter. Yeah. I don't have to convince anybody he's a tough guy. They know he's a tough guy. But the best thing is he's so, you know, chillaxed. He's so, hey, bro. And he's so, like, the kind of guy you'd see at a bar and go, that's my guy here, he's not a tough guy. And then suddenly you're just lying on the ground, like, what just happened to me? Like, a legit badass. One of my favorite moments with us was I was doing one of my usual round-the-world trips, and I was getting into New York super late. The flight had got messed up. We're going off the air in about 30 minutes or so, and I just touched down. I still had to get my bag. I was talking with Gabe Sapolsky on the phone. Like, I don't know if I'm going to make it. I went out and paid one of those stupid people that stand there trying to get you to take their cab for double the fare. And I told them, I will give you $80 just to get me from here to Laboom, which is like 10 miles in peak traffic, if you actually get me there. So they drove me there like crazy. They were waiting with the money. I ran upstairs, got there just in time for the match before finishing, stormed to the ring. Had no time to hear the verbiage for the promo. I just went out, cut this promo. Gotcha. I knew it was on Riddle. That's all I knew was on Riddle. Yeah. I was ranting and raving for about 10 minutes. Called Riddle out. Was legitimately annoyed because I just got off this international flight. Finally, Riddle strolled out. We're face to face. I started cutting a promo. His catchphrase is bro. So I was like, you've ruined the word bro for me. It used to mean brother. It used to mean something in this business. And you've ruined this business. You've ruined the word for me. Just all on the fly, just going off the top of my head. Ranting and raving, spilling my guts out to him, like on my knees at times, shouting at him. And he just looked at me and went, chill, bro, and dropped the mic. And I was like, the coolest boy. I was like, chill. And I tore the ring apart. Just like crazy. But that man is so over and so cool. Nice.
He's amazing. While we're talking about amazing indie workers, how soon do you think it's going to be before Keith Lee is signed?
Very soon, I imagine. He's very, very good. And I think he's the last guy that dropped me, I think. The last match I had was Orido. And the last guy that I had physicality with was Keith.
He took you all the way out of Evolve.
He took me out of Evolve. That day, the day I debuted for NXT, was the craziest day of all time. I didn't know it was going to be that day. I had like six things in a row. Like, it was like 8 in the morning signing, and then I had a show, the What Culture show, and then I had a radio appearance, and then my wife was running to get a suit during that time for TakeOver, and then racing back, and then I had the Evolve show, which we figured out the angle at the start where I was going to cut a promo, and Keith Lee came out. Took me out, ran back, literally ran to the car, drove to the Amway. My wife was waiting, jumped in the car, went in the back door, and I was getting showered as she was dressing me to head straight to the ring.
Is that WrestleMania weekend?
Yeah, for TakeOver. Right. It was the craziest day of all time leading up to that moment. I wonder how the crowd are going to react until they raced me out and sat me in the seat, and I put my head down and went, oh, wait a minute, I hope they make some noise when I come to the screen. You considered this, it was just such a crazy day.
And they did.
Oh, thank God. The smile on my face was legit. That was a cool feeling.
And working with Gabe Sapolsky, how was that?
Oh, he's great.
Can you talk about that, like creative-wise?
He's just fantastic. He thinks so far ahead. He's always just gets me.
Talent-friendly too, right?
Yeah, great. I got along fantastic with him. You know, the deal was in the beginning. The reason I was going to do the Evolve show was Trent Barretta. And I were hanging out, he's a good friend of mine, and I told him my plan, and I was like, I need to get on these shows with guys that can wrestle. And he said, you know, the Evolve show's here, you know, money-wise it might not be great, but it can, you know, get that opportunity, get you that platform, and I can probably get you against me. So Gabe was like, oh, well, he's a former WWE guy, I'll just give him a shot. Trent got hurt, and then Gabe had seen my Scotland promo, kind of got a feel for what it was all about, and was like, I think we can maybe do business, and then put the title on me, and then from there we just worked together, and my goal was take the Evolve title around the world, defend it around the world, get the name of Evolve around as champion, and he would come up with these fantastic stories for me and kept me relevant and really taught me a lot during that time. And he'd always have everything so planned out and well, like in advance, which was kind of...
He's a visionary.
For me. And he works, you know, he's in NXT now. And the guy,
I was going to say, man, I heard that he was helping creatively at NXT.
Yeah, so he's able to, you know, help out for me because, like, if people have not been familiar with my work, which a lot of the guys are, the staff there is fantastic. But, you know, Gabe's able to say, like, hey, if you give Drew a mic in the ring, that's kind of his stronger area. Yeah. For a guy who wasn't really a promo guy before, like, now, over the past few years, I've really got... comfortable in that environment and thrive and love when I get the opportunity to talk to everybody, because all I do is say what I really feel now, and if it's something that's a storyline, I'll find something I believe in.
If it's coming from a real place, man, you don't have to be a catchphrase or something clever.
It's easy, and that's the thing. They don't write it for you. Yeah. They're not going to hand you a script. We're not actors. Like, we're, you know, they work with us. This is what we need to get across. And then that's the cool thing about, you know, the NXT. It really is a team effort, and they want to give the best possible product. So they work with you, and that gets the best possible results.
Yeah, you get a little bit more leeway there, right, on things as far as...
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's probably a different run SmackDown as well. I can tell just watching it and talking to the guys. Like, I think, you know, people are getting trusted a lot more, and it's building that trust as well. You know, that's the cool thing about NXT. You know, you get the chance to be there, you get the chance to build the trust, and then you get the chance to do it on Raw.
And really, like, come on, if guys are able to come up with their own verbiage, like, it really helps the writers because it's less work for them.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's cool having that, you know, trust in that back and forth, because the writers are great. Like, I just did one, the show the other week, where it was kind of my first time talking in the ring, where I was talking, you know, about my title shot on Bobby Roode and whatever, and we sat down and we're bantering back and forth, and he came up with some great stuff but was putting in all my ideas, and it was, you know, cool that they were, you know, willing to work with me that way, and they're so creatively talented. In the end, it was a team effort. We came up with something, and then I went out there, didn't necessarily say what was on the paper, but basically said it was on the paper, but I meant every word of it, and it's the biggest response I've had from the fans, and also backstage since I was in the crowd in Orlando, just for the first time I talked. It was the first time I've really done a promo on WWE TV as myself.
Yeah. That was your most recent, like, We Are NXT promo that you did?
Yeah.
That was awesome. So when Vince McMahon sent you to, like, speech school to work on your accent, what was the hardest trait you had to break?
I only went to a few of them. But, basically it was based on a conversation backstage. Like, I was fired up about something. And, you know, again, I was a kid and not exactly was diplomatic when I came to stuff. I just kind of burst in to his office. And I was going off about something that was annoying me and doing it in the wrong way. And when I, you know, the accent, when I get excited or I'm talking too fast, or even right now, you can hear when I get into something, I get a bit passionate about it. It's hard to understand me. And, you know, he just kind of watched me for 5 minutes, spill my guts, and then told me, I think we're going to send you for elocution lessons. Never got an answer to my question. But, you know, looking back, I was like, man, that's so unprofessional. But, I did the classes, and all it was basically telling me what I knew already. And what I did when there was a camera on me or I had a microphone in my hand, I just had to be conscious of doing it more around, you know, work and backstage, at least. And then the more I worked on it at work, and the more I did it in real life, the less people in general started going, "What? What did you say?" Which literally happened for the first 4 years of my life in America.
Did you have to bring proof back that you showed up to class?
No, I didn't, thankfully. But it made a big difference, like I say, to my personal life, because it was annoying getting, you know, everybody saying "what" to me every 2 seconds. When I go back home, I was talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
When I go back home, I get no more crap than I do from Scottish people. And I apologize to Scotland. I know I've got the American Scottish twang going on, but the reality is we have the hardest accent to understand in the world.
It is
literally the thickest accent on earth. So I'm still doing it for Scotland. Don't worry, I'm doing it for the UK, but I need the world to understand us. So I have to talk this way.
I just spent a week with a guy with a Geordie accent, and you're way easier to understand.
That's worse. Yeah, packed. Like, Neville does a good job. Yeah. Like, enunciating his words, but he's still got that accent.
Yeah, but don't people now tell you back home that you sound like you're American now?
Yeah, a lot of people say, "Oh, where in America are you from?" When I'm in Scotland, I look at them and go, "I'm from Scotland. I'm from 30 minutes from Glasgow. I spent 21 years there." But I've spent a third of my life in America, so I'm like a third American, I guess.
Hey, everyone, like, if you guys have any, like, great questions, like, hit Drew with them now, because we're going to let him go pretty soon here.
So, okay, your time in TNA, you left as soon as, well, around the same time that the new regime was starting to come in. Were there ever any talks with them about creating a new contract? And if so, what led to your overall departure with TNA?
First of all, you know, really great time there, a great run. Jungle Burek's the one that brought me in, and I initially didn't want to come in to the company. I'd 7 months into my indie run, it was really on fire. I didn't want to be on TV. And he just wouldn't take no for an answer. He was like, "I'm going to let you be yourself." And he stuck to his word, kept me as a top player. I was a champion there. It really meant, you know, a lot. And I was filming TV, like, all the, like, 3 months together at a time. So I was able to do all my stuff around it. And, you know, it was a really incredible run and helped, you know, grow my brand and show the world who I really was. But, around about that time, obviously, the changeover was happening. There's a lot that goes into it and a lot that has to be done. But it got to the point where the contract offer came too late. And my wife and I had already made up our mind that we were going to, you know, move on for that time. And it was no hard feelings. It was a very mutual split. And it was round about that time, I guess, the conversation started, you know, with WWE. And everything, like you say, in this job is timing. And it was just the right time and the right, you know, decision for my family and my career. I had a great run there.
You talked about being a fan. You talked about your markout moments, and you talked about how some people don't believe the belt's real. What will it be like for you, and where will it rank if you're able to capture that NXT title at TakeOver Brooklyn 3?
If I won the title and the biggest show of the year, the best way to sum it up was just watch my face if I have that title in my hands. If that was to happen, that will sum it up, because it is real to me. It is a symbol of, you know, your life's work, and if you get that opportunity, you know, to be that person and be that representative of this company, I can't even imagine that. And I legit don't know what's going to happen. I'll say that right now. Like, I have no idea. But, you know, if you get that opportunity to represent a brand in general, like, I've been so, you know, blessed to represent so many people as champion. I've been Intercontinental champion, been tag team champion. But if you get the opportunity to be the face and figurehead of somewhere like NXT, that, you know, that's a hell of a pat in the back. And that's, you know, that makes every journey, every bump, all the pain and stress and being away worthwhile. So you will be able to tell in my face after the match if that was to happen.
I'm sorry, do you guys want to keep on going?
No, Sean.
Do you have any guys when you and Bobby are finished with your program that you're looking forward to working with an NXT roster right now?
Oh, for sure.
Any picks? Like, hey, okay, this is who I want to work with next.
So the good thing is, like, it's not me just saying it. There is so many.
Yeah.
Like, Roderick Strong and I have had great matches many times, and we're looking forward to getting the opportunity on the NXT platform. Aleister Black's been built up fantastic right now. Yeah. We've had battles in the past that, you know, I'm really excited about the idea that we're both being kept, you know, separate. We're both good guys right now. We're building up our thing, and this time it's going to mean so much more when we get the opportunity to work together. And I know Johnny Gargano, like, we've had some fantastic battles and been a fantastic team in the past as the Evolve Tag Team Champions. And we get Kyle O'Reilly coming in now, Bobby Fish coming in. Man, I'm going to miss people out. The Velveteen Dream, we've had some great matches in the live events. We get the chance on the TV.
Oh, Velveteen Dream. Right?
Oh, he's fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't really, like, I haven't seen a lot, but, like, mainly just pictures. But I like what I see.
He's great. Like, the way he bumps, like, Mr. Perfect. Like, it's just the way sometimes I hit him and I'm just, I get to step back. I imagine that was like for you when you hit Kurt sometimes, or whenever you watch Kurt bump, you don't know he's going to do it. You throw a punch and he'll spin around inside.
Yeah, you run his head into the turnbuckle. Next thing you know, he's doing a whirly turtle.
You have to take a step back. Jack Evans.
And he's another massive dude.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. Like, you don't realize it. Like, the first match we had, like, I do like a total world Mexican style on the apron, like a backbreaker, and like he ran in for it, and I went to pick him up. Usually I just twist the guy, no problem. I went running at me. I went, man, that's a big dude. Get my weight behind this one. But yeah, just the way he bumps is unbelievable, and he's only like 22, 23, and just like his mind for it already. He's just so much more advanced than he should be. But yeah, those bumps get me. It's like Jack Evans at the PWG the one time, I don't know if you saw that, when I slapped him when he came off the rope. The guy spun about three times before he hit the ground, and I stepped back and just went, yeah, I've no idea he was going to bump like that. You just got to go with it and react with it. But yeah, the whole roster is so good. It's so hard to single people out, and I know I'm going to leave and go, God, I should have said that guy, but
they'll get over it.
It really is, you know, that incredible, the talent level. Yeah. That's why it annoys me whenever we talk about this bloody,
I just figured, like, man, you probably mouth is watering of all the different possible matchups you have.
Yeah,
here,
that's
why
I'm absolutely buzzing. Like, just have like the incredible talent roster already, and then just the guys coming in just are adding to it like crazy. And everyone, you know, says, like, whatever they say. I remember the last TakeOver, they were like, oh, this is probably the weakest TakeOver I've had. As soon as it was finished, it was the best TakeOver I've ever had. And
when they say that, what do you mean? Like, leading up to it?
Last time, like, I listened to the fans, like, around and in the Twitter, or, you know, I hear just in real life. And I remember before the last one in Chicago, like, people were, like, acting like it was not going to be a great show. The rest have been so great, whatever. Afterwards, everyone was like, that was the best one by far. And that's the cool thing about TakeOver. There's only four a year. They're always a spectacle. Everyone busts their arse. And, you know, we've got, like, a little silent competition. I'll say it, you know. Yeah. SummerSlam's the next day. We want to top SummerSlam. We're going to top SummerSlam.
I think it's very, very well maybe that the crowd is hotter for the NXT show than it is for the SummerSlam show.
And that's the plan, and that's what's cool. Like, you know what it was like back in the day. Like, yeah, we wish we had a, you know, WCW or whatever for have that competition. Like, they've got the Raw and SmackDown there with the friendly competition, but yeah, NXT is right there. We've got that friendly competition with everyone. We want to show everybody we're the best, and TakeOver is our night.
It is.
Well,
go ahead, guys.
I watched an interview recently with Grado, and you and him have a long history, and he told a story about being 15 at a seminar with you and Jake Roberts, and Jake Roberts singling you out as, this guy is going to be the star. What was that like?
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. I don't know if he remembers it. I mean, well, I guess it was Jake Roberts. But did you understand what he was saying?
Yeah.
We're from the same town, if you can believe it.
Oh, you're Grado?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm from, we're both from Ayrshire. Like, same place as William Wallace and Robert the Bruce.
Is that what your original accent sounds like, is Grado's accent?
No, I never talked like that.
It's yourself.
But, yeah, it was crazy. They got Jake in for a seminar in Scotland. It was round about the time we'd just started building the Scottish wrestling scene. There was a place called East Kilbride. And we had like an adult who rented out the post office since we were all kids, and we just kind of teach ourselves how to wrestle. And Jake was living in the UK at the time, and he came down for this seminar, and he was teaching us pretty much the basics and just talking a lot of the stuff I wish he would tell me now, because it was going over our heads.
Yes,
it's kind of stuff Sean does now and talks I retain. But there was a point where he pointed at the end of it and said, "This is the guy that's gonna do something, this guy that's gonna make it," which is pretty crazy, you know, looking back now. And I honestly forgot until Grado brought it back up, and I was like, man, I totally forgot he said that. It's like stuff like that, you appreciate and you say thank you, but you can't let it get to your head, or you're just, that'll be your downfall.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or you can let it get to your head, and it, be your downfall.
Well, we got NXT tonight. We got NXT in Bakersfield on the 10th, in San Jose on the 11th, and Sacramento on the 12th, and then the big takeover on the 19th. So look forward to seeing Drew at all of these shows.
Hey, so do you have any other things going on, like, in your life that you want to talk about? You know, like any outside projects or anything?
Man, I'm so like, boring. My life has revolved around wrestling forever.
Right,
like,
it's just funny because
I'm so used to having like five or six different companies I'm trying to build at one time, and now just all my focus is in NXT, which is pretty cool that I get to give it all that attention. But yeah, that's NXT, and I actually get to be home and see, you know, the wife and the cats, and
no babies in the future.
In the future, but not till I'm home. Like, it's bad enough not missing the cats or whatever. So I don't want to be missing the kids. And it's cool. Like, we've got the house now. Like, as I say, in St. Petersburg. And
he lives like right in my old neighborhood. 4th Street, but never mind. I'm not going to tell everyone. But yeah.
What he means is 93rd and a half street. But no, it's cool, like actually having something I can point at and say, jumping in my head for my entire life, bought that.
So, 10 minutes, 15 minutes tops from the airport.
Yeah, nice drive, it's perfect. Yeah, I love the area. No one's ever lived in it before. It's pretty cool, just like I say, to have something you can say, like, oh, no, wrestling got this. That's pretty cool.
Tampa is such a sweet airport to travel on.
Tampa's the best. I hate Orlando Airport so much. I feel bad for all the other NXT guys because they've got to fly from Orlando. They're actually probably flying from there today.
They got in earlier, right?
Yeah, they get in like 3 hours later. It's probably because of the airport being so terrible.
Probably.
Not because of a later flight, because of that airport.
Hey, let's let you get the hell out of here and try to.
I'll stay here all day. I'll talk all day. I'll drive you crazy. So you'll force me out eventually.
We could just sit here and talk for hours and it would not get old. But we need to get down to NXT in a little while.
Oh, that whole show thing.
So, man,
where can everybody follow you?
Not down the street, but on Twitter. What am I at? I should check it now because we changed it. It's D McIntyre WWE. You can follow me at the Twitter, and I got an Instagram, but I've no idea what that is. It's the one with the tick beside it.
And then Jimbo?
You can find me on Twitter at Jimbo in the Booth.
And you guys can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at _ Denise Del Sado.
You can find me everywhere at Sundown Motel.
And don't forget to follow us on AfterBuzz TV. Follow Sean at The Real X-Pac.
That's it.
Leave those DMs. IG, he's like, no. X-Pac12360, Facebook, X-Pac12360 Show. Don't forget to sign up for our newsletter that we have out. Facebook, and where else is it?
You can sign up on Facebook. We have the link, and then we have it on Twitter too. So we have it everywhere.
And then iTunes, make sure to leave 5 stars, comment on our YouTube page, all that great stuff. And you can follow me at TK Trinidad.
Nice. Sean? What? At The Real X-Pac. And your shirt's at prowrestlingtees.com/SeanWaltman.
That's right. TK already got my Twitter.
Tying it up. Yeah. He doesn't like doing that stuff.
I don't like shilling for myself. I need to learn. Anyways, it was great having you, man. And
thank you for having me. You guys.
Hey, we didn't get. Did we give him a pop when we announced him?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's
right. Oh, big old pop.
I forgot.
Oh, he's got Lulu.
Lulu. Yeah. Anyway, all right, everyone. Hey, I'm not sure who the guest is next week, but we'll be back next week. Right here on X-Pac 12360.
from executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Sean Waltman, producers Jimbo Frank and TK Trinidad, managing producer of AfterBuzz TV Wrestling Mark Donica, and the entire X-Pac 12360 staff. We would like to thank you for tuning in. Like us on Facebook, rate and comment on iTunes and YouTube. Follow X-Pac on Twitter at TheRealXPac and email us at xpac12360show@gmail.com. This has been a presentation of the AfterBuzz TV Network. Buzz you later!